bottom side, under,
right here.
I have it. Yep.
Got it?
Yep.
Okay, are we talking to each other across the room?
We are.
Okay.
May I ask a question?
Robin, do you want to come up for the questions?
Yeah, I can't run them. I can just let it run.
Is that precarious or is it okay?
I have to fiddle with it to set it. I didn't set it to just run.
So just let it rotate.
Oh, that's the wrong way. Sorry.
A couple of us have circled around Carl Jung's myth over our lunch. And I know this may be an impossible question. Jung wrote a whole book, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, I suppose attempting to get at his own myth. I'm just wondering what you would say Jung's myth is.
The book was actually written by Aniele Jaffe, and it was hard to get Jung to do any autobiography. His autobiography is the Red Book. He worked on it for, a dozen years or so. So Aniele Jaffe, he finally gave permission. She was a member of the inner circle in Zurich there. I think it's quite clear. Now, some of you may or may not have known that Jung had a pretty bad head injury when he was young. And he became neurotic thereafter. He fell and hit his head on a block. And he was always regarded as sort of the odd boy out in school. He was a little strange. He had a big vocabulary that's dangerous to have in public school anywhere, it seems. And people think you're a nerd or whatever. After he hit his head on the block, he started having fainting spells. Every time he had to go to school, he had a fainting spell. And he finally was really just like a kind of a developmentally disabled kid when he overheard his father in a garden. The father didn't know he was listening. The father was talking to a pastor friend. And he overheard his father saying, "I don't know what I'm going to do with Carl. I don't have the means to keep him in an institution the rest of his life." Well, when Jung heard that, he had been going to school for a while after that head injury, and he would faint promptly at 11 o'clock in school, and so the school authorities finally kicked him out because all the kids were simply waiting. Their big event of the day was waiting for Jung to faint, waiting for Carl to faint. And so Carl built himself up and resolved to go back to school without fainting, and he did. So he overcame the adversity that time. Some of you may remember the other neurotic event that Carl Jung had, which is that he was walking through the streets of Basel. That's where he grew up in Switzerland. He didn't grow up in Zurich. He looked at the gold roof of the church, and he started to have a thought. And he wouldn't let himself have the thought. And he went like a shaman, a little amarok. That means a little crazy. So you start hallucinating and you start having visions and stuff like that. And the amarok Jung, anytime anybody would whisper something, he would overhear, and it was like they were shouting. He realized that his mother was a kind of a bit of a witch. She really was an odd duck, very superstitious, listened to spirits all the time. I mean, he went through quite a crazy period. And then, I think he was about 10 or 11, I can't remember the exact age. Some of you may have read the Bear biography. And I think this is, it might be in Memories, Dreams, Reflections. He suddenly realized that he had a neurosis. And the thought, he said, "I had to allow myself to have the thought that started to come." And the thought that started to come was not acceptable. Jung's father was a Swiss Reformed pastor who was having his own struggles of faith and not knowing what to believe. And the thought was that God had his commode installed above the golden roof of the church and was taking a crap on the golden roof of the church. When he finally let himself have it, all the neurotic symptoms cleared up. So that establishes Carl Jung as a shaman, a greater shaman. because he had to fight through the things himself. He didn't ask for that vocation. When he was a young man, he thought, let's see, what am I going to be? I think I'd like to be an archaeologist. Well, nobody can make a living in archaeology. Parents and other people told him that. Well, maybe I'll be a doctor. He didn't like med school that well. So guess what? He became an archaeologist of the soul. Right? So.
And a soul doctor.
And a soul doctor. So he's a shaman and a soul doctor.
Do you think that he thought that when he went out to find his own myth, is that what he came back with?
I don't know. I don't know what went on in that man's mind.
There are a series of interviews with him that are quite interesting, and I think there are two series of films, aren't there? We used to run them every now and then at the center.
I'm trying to remember the name of the...
Richard Evans.
Did a series of interviews of Jung in his 80s.
Very interesting.
And the one where he says, the soul of man hangs by a thin thread. I mean, I got a frisson, I got shivers when I heard him say that.
There are a lot of hints in there. You know, he's dodgy. But, and for good reason, because, you know, if he says, I believe this or that, he's got all these followers.
He was a great visionary. He kept going back to alchemy, even when his mistress, Tony Wolf, and all of the scientifically oriented friends told him he was absolutely mad, he was going to ruin his reputation, people were going to think he was crazy. Tony Wolf was his mistress for about 25 years. I hadn't realized how flamboyant that was. When he would sit up on a podium, he would have Emma Jung and his mistress, Tony Wolf, who became an analyst, a lay analyst over here. Yes?
Thank you. I have been learning from and been nurtured a great deal by the work of Thomas Berry, who calls us to dream the dream of the earth by tapping into the psychic energies of the archetypal symbols contained in dreams and mythology and ritual. And I see you all carrying out that wonderful task in so many ways.
Yeah.
And I have a question about this task that arises from my background as a friend, as a Quaker. Because I see all around me a culture that is embracing the myth of redemptive violence, the myth that says that we will save the world by killing one another and destroying. Mm-hmm. And that is an archetype. That is a myth. And so I wonder what Barry would say, but I also wonder how you all might respond. What are the myths that we can embrace? What are those archetypal symbols, stories, or a story that we can embrace to transform the world in
sense? Thank you for the question.
Thank you, yeah. And Tom Berry, oh golly, we need him now. what a wonderful man.
When I first met Tom Berry that same year, I was really, really moved by him. That same year, I went on a vision quest in the desert, and my son dropped me off in the desert in a really remote area, and 5 days later came to pick me up. I was a solo vision quest. And included in the heart of that vision quest, I did my own Sundance. I thought, okay, Steve, you're really a daring fool. I stared at the sun from the moment it came up until about noon. And I thought, okay, I was out there alone by myself. I thought, okay, if Western science is really correct, I'm going to be blind, and my son will just kind of find me more or less in the same place, but I won't be able to find my camp or the water or anything else, so it's really a dumb thing to do. Well, what I found was, what I saw was the sun's door. And it was just, I would say it was about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. I was staring right straight into the sun. And this beautiful black disc came up in front of the sun, and it shimmered right there. And then I could see the aura of the sun. I could see the solar flares and all that kind of stuff coming out. And I had deep mystical experiences. And When I told that to Mary Thunder, a great Native American shaman, she said, "Ah, you saw the sun's door." That's what the sun dancers see when they do the great sun dance. And thereafter, I built a stone circle on the mountaintop. I could see the sun's door. I could see. I negotiated around fine, and then I sat down and wrote a 6-page poem to Thomas Berry. And somewhere I have it. It's in the bowels of my computer. Like Robin, I have a kind of an evil genie that lives in my computer, and it sometimes gloms things, and then I find them years
later. Mine's in my head. Later,
computers break down, and you don't know what the heck is on there. And I'd love to find that poem, because it was really... I worked on it very hard in the solitude, and I love Tom Berry. So anyway, but the answer is, what is the myth? The myth is the myth of Buddha. The myth is the myth of Jesus Christ. Think about the life of Jesus Christ. It's only those doggone fundamentalists who say, well, Jesus is coming back again, and no more Mr. Nice Guy this time. They're relying on the passage in Matthew 24:25, in which he says, "I'm going to come in the clouds of glory with the angels of heaven at my background and at my back," and that's what these guys envision, and he's going to take up the 144 just persons, and he's going to slay all the infidels and the non-Christians. And sorry, fellas. Jesus did exactly the opposite of that. He submitted to everything and thereby gave us a story that lasted 2,000 years. My son Merlin, when he was a freshman in college, wrote for his English professor a paper called Jesus as Shaman. And I looked at it and I went, this guy is brilliant. He is something else. The journey to the underworld, the journey to the upper world, the sacrifice, the 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness, the miracles, the walking on water, the healing the sick, the raising the dead, you name it, he got it all. And they're all shamanic. So